Today on She Talks Tech, I am joined by Rabi Atiti, Global Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Manager for Flutter International. In this episode, I speak to Rabi about our extensive remit across multiple continents and ask her about her inspirations and what led her to pursue a career in ED&I. Rabi also reflects on cultural differences she has had to adapt to upon arriving in the UK and how she has paid the kindness she received forward throughout her career. She also discusses the importance of giving back and engaging in voluntary roles outside of work. Inspiring stuff indeed.
Rabi, welcome to my lounge.
Wow, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, what an impressive bio. I can't wait to get started. So tell us a little bit about that background. Where did the journey begin? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school, education? Where did you get started?
How long do we have for this interview? I'll try and be quick. Yeah, like I said, thank you, Vanessa, for having me today. Really delighted for the work that you're doing and just bringing the lens of, you know, human experiences and just sharing and bringing the voices of people together. I'm delighted to be here. So born and raised in Nigeria. Yes, the western part of Africa. Africa's got 54 countries in that continent. And, you know, very lucky to be born in the most populous country in Africa. And yeah, had my primary and secondary and higher education in, you know, in Nigeria. 11 years ago, moved to the UK with my family and yeah, kind of like furthered my education as well in the UK and abroad, just really learning. And I think that's something that we can, you know, have a deep dive into when we talk about what that experience looks like for me, because it was a cultural change, you know, cultural shock. And yeah, just being a sponge, absorbing, learning, just intrigued by how different we are, but how so similar in the way that we can do things together. So yeah.
Tell us about your first job. So you kind of had your education in Nigeria, came across the UK. Talk to me a little bit about that journey and landing that first job.
Makes me always smile when I think about it. Let me just put it there that I came to the UK. By the time I came, my organs were formed, and that was in my 30s. Okay. And I had to come in, learn the cultural nuances, both the corporate world and how the community kind of like live. I made a decision with myself, and, you know, just really because I've got children and I need to help them to integrate in the community rather than bringing my life, my story, and say it's all about me. I thought, I'm going to learn, how does things really work in the UK? What is the culture like? How am I going to use my culture to harness the things that I'm going to learn from this beautiful country that I now call home? How am I going to use that to, you know, make the world a better place for us? I thought, yes, let me get a job when I come into the UK. So moved down very quickly. I thought I'll take a couple of project management program. And the first thing I did was to do the Prince 2 project management. When I learned that, I said, what opportunities do I have? Well, there were challenges because, you know, you come in from a different country, deciding to kind of like start the career ladder. People were asking, what experience do you have in the UK, the UK experience? And the question was, if you don't give me that opportunity, where do I get the experience from? Exactly. But my community, really grateful that we moved into a place where really open, people were very keen to learn my stories. And I put myself out there, I was asking lots of questions. And my children actually gave me that opportunity as well to knock on doors and just, you know, that curiosity about how things work.
Yeah.
And I met, you know, this incredible neighbor of ours. I never tell my story without her. Her name is Gemma. She's like a sister to me. We spoke this morning or messaged this morning. Incredible person who helped me understand the UK and how things work. We started sharing stories of how we do things back home. But before I quickly talk about that aspect of, you know, again, how I landed my first job, she quickly noticed, we talked about eye contact. So in Nigeria, when you speak to a boss, your parents or an elderly person, someone that's older than you, you don't look at them in the eye. So there is that sense of, you know, like, I'm hearing you, you put your hands together, you're nodding, you're hearing, that's how you communicate engagement. And Gemma picked up on it as well. So she did ask me, you know, what was that about? I said, that's how you show sign, that's your sign of respect back home. And she thought, well, in the UK, you've got to keep eye contact. That's how you demonstrate you're engaging, you're listening, you're hearing people. I thought that's going to be really difficult. So when I had the opportunity to land my first proper job in the UK, and I've got to say it here, Lloyds Banking Group actually created that opportunity for me. Got the, you know, the interview slot, and I was invited for the interview. I remember vividly the three interviewers, you know, in that room. And the first question was, actually, prior to that time, Gemma prepped me. She taught me what to, you know, how to engage and kind of like overcome that eye contact. I thought, yes, I was ready for this. Got into the interview, and the first question went, so tell us about you. I just gave the eye contact of my life. Like, I felt the tension in the room. I kept the eye contact so closely. It's not this time where you can do like the Zoom call. It was, you know, proper face-to-face interview many, many years ago. I think that was 2012. Kept the eye contact and, you know, just really engaged. I felt like, what's happening in the room? You know, everyone seemed like they're sweating. I was sweating myself, but of course, you know, I was nervous. And, you know, went through it. I became really good friends to my manager. I don't know how I got the job, but I did get the job. We went through the interview, yeah. Got the job. And I spent about 4 years in Lloyds Banking Group. And that just opened my eyes to the incredible gifts that we have within the UK and how I just navigated my space. Just so much to learn from that experience. And yeah, got that. And, you know, just really learned so much in that job.
But you're an avid learner, aren't you? I mean, you and I have had previous conversations and you are on this continuous learning kind of journey. And would you say that that's kind of propelled you in your career? That first, that curiosity?
I think to grow, you need to learn. You know, my mom's always said this, you know, when she was still around, she taught me very early in my life that you understand the stories of people that are different to you by actually being with them. And when you are with people, when you find yourself in a new environment, if you don't have that professional curiosity, as the case was for me, you struggle. And what happens, and this is what I find in some communities, is that there is an isolation. When you isolate yourself, you think then that people are against you.
Yeah.
And it is a real, is a massive challenge. I also know that in that learning stage, you let go of things, and that's your vulnerability. I mean, in my 30s, I said earlier, when I came to the UK, my organs were formed already. You know, it was as if there wasn't any more for me to learn, but I had to drop everything. My first motivation was my children. How do I make sure I'm leading by example? How do I make sure that my children see me as their first role model? So I'm creating an atmosphere for them to learn. I'm creating a space where I say, you know what? Vulnerability is not necessarily a weakness. It is actually grace, courage. And this, I call it grace, courage, because there is a grace that comes with being vulnerable. Sometimes uncomfortable, but when you get to the other side, and this is where the stories that we share is so important for people to know that learning is key. It might be uncomfortable, might be difficult, might be tricky, but when you get to the other side, you'll be smiling, you did. And that's where I am today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And also, I think it's lovely, you know, women supporting women, the lovely Gemma, you know, the kind of, and it's so important when you get that mentorship from kind of somebody. So, you know, we're giving a shout out to Gemma here. If she's watching, start you on that journey. So obviously at the moment you are head of ED&I over at Flutter. Tell me a little bit about that role and tell me about your journey into diversity and inclusion, because I know it's quite a personal one.
It is. It is both personal, kind of like society also drove it, you know, it stems from a lived experience. It stems from, you know, my everyday experience in the world that I, you know, I've kind of like grown up. Well, I'm the Global Diversity and Inclusion Manager for Flutter International, and I'm looking after 9 jurisdictions globally. Wow. Yeah, really interesting, fascinating job. I'm incredibly proud of the things that we do when I see our leaders kind of like reinforcing the tone at the top of the importance of, you know, this work. It's kind of like humbling. You know, going 2 years in my job now, the first thing that really happened when I took this opportunity was a clean slate to say, this is where we are. We have diverse culture. The organization is massive. So the way we will talk about diversity in the UK, as an example, will be totally different when you talk about or when you have a discussion around diversity, equity, and inclusion, say in Bulgaria, in India, in Malta. I always approach it with a sense of, you know, that tone of humility in my curiosity, because people see, they can see through you, they hear through, you know, the words that you speak, and they want to know the why. So if you have a clear definition of why this is important in every jurisdictions where we have license to operate, you begin to have those open doors and those very open conversations with people. So the first, you know, thing that kind of like took on within the role was to understand the data that we have. So understanding the data meant that we have to know what is our data telling us in our different, you know, parts of the business. How do we make sure we understand that to enable that shift in thinking? When you think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it just drives beyond that 9 protected characteristics. It's beyond that. I tell people DEI is about you and I and everyone. How you show up in the place, how you're listening to people with intent, how you're leading with humility and humanity, how people see that they feel valued around you. What kind of psychological safety are you providing? Are you taking with you as a leader a safe space to encourage people to tell their stories, to help you understand the narrative of the business when you think about fostering everyday inclusion? I think it's a big culture piece. It's an area where leaders can actually pause and say, I'm not going to project my privilege and use the lens of privilege to drive this agenda. It's about stepping back and allowing people with lived experience, people with, you know, the right expertise to come into the room and have those conversations. So, you know, for us was around, you know, understanding our data was the first piece of work that I took on. And, you know, very delighted to say that in driving our inclusive workplace, we have been able to launch, you know, last year, we launched our first ever inclusion survey. That was a big, you know, like a big piece of work that we did across the business. We provided our assurance to our people to say, you know, we want to know how we can improve the workplace, how we can encourage people from diverse background to have a conversation, because we know that DEI is important for today and our business.
Hopefully one day we won't have to have those conversations because it'll be embedded in the cultural society that we live in, but we have a way to go, right? And much work to be done.
Absolutely. That's right.
So you also do a number of things outside of work, don't you? So not satisfied with, you know, the day job and everything like that. There's a number of other extracurricular things that you're involved in. Tell me a little bit about those.
I'm very passionate about people. And I think my passion for people kind of like, you know, when you think about the life that you have and why you're here, my why is everyday people. My why is how do I use my children to also demonstrate kindness and be people in the society that can make the world a better place. You know, my 9-to-5 job is incredibly important to me. I know the industry that I work. Some people ask questions, but, you know, you think about the people that you do this work for, and, you know, it is really important that the people element of it is not taken out of the job. So outside of my 9-to-5 job, I run a couple of, you know, work in the community. I currently, you know, sit on the Independent Police Advisory Group, working with different families and, you know, different faith groups, just to bring the community together to integrate, to hear the challenges from different communities. And I think that work really reminds me of when we talk about intersectionality, not isolating, you know, the factors, but actually bringing everyone together to understand. And my work just means that in the community, I talk to Christians, Muslims, Hindus, and just different religious leaders that's just really humbling to see. I also, you know, do work with children, you know, teaching, you know, how to, you know, just running like reading clubs, supporting women globally in, you know, into leadership and independence, educating women, empowerment. And yeah, just using my space, my voice, to drive the little that I can in a positive way. But yeah, the most important thing for me is just everyday living for people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it's impressive. I say, obviously, I know you're tackling knife crime within communities, yeah, sit on the World Economic Forum. So, you know, it's amazing. And it is so important that we do use our voice above our jobs, you know, for the greater good and the greater society.
That's right.
So we talked a little bit about Gemma earlier on being a mentor. Have you benefited from other mentors in your career, or has there been someone that's opened doors of opportunity for you? And if they have, how have you paid that forward?
Wow. I believe in mentoring strongly. I have been mentored by loads and loads of people. I currently have, you know, 4 mentors in different areas of my life. Mentoring play a key part into, you know, kind of like how you grow, how you support people, and how you can pay back. We have, and this is, you know, currently as in linked to the work that we're doing within Flutter International, we have recently launched the first ever female mentoring program. As part of our data insight, we recognize that there is a gap due to the industry that we work in, and sometimes, you know, the functions could mean that there is that gap when we have, you know, kind of like a female workforce in the business. And that mentoring program meant that we're supporting the development of our female workforce and focusing on, you know, how we kind of like create career pathway for our female workforce. So we have currently 198 membership strength. The first cohort, we paired 86 mentors and mentees. We ran a feedback session where lots of insights, people are feeling incredibly supported, and the fact that they have role models to go to just have the conversation. You know, I mean, this is such an important month, and the conversation we're having is really important. It's Gender Equality Month, isn't it? And then on the 8th, we're celebrating International Women's Day. The theme is Break the Bias. Sometimes you need another woman that's gone ahead of you to help you navigate your space. Sometimes you just need someone who would listen. Sometimes it's someone that can hold your hands. And sometimes it's someone that can say, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And you know, so you're so right. It's just sometimes just seeing when someone sees in you what you don't see in yourself, saying to you, you've got this, you can do it. That's all you need to hear.
Absolutely.
That little bit of confidence. So back to companies. I mean, obviously, you know, extensive experience within the ED&I space. Where do you think companies are missing a trick? What can they do more to foster inclusion? Because previously we talked about diversity, and we often say, you know, you'll never get diversity until you get the inclusion piece right. And nobody's nailed it. Even when we look across our customer base, you know, none of our clients have got it dead right, because I think it's impossible. But what's your advice based on that experience, how companies can be more inclusive? What is it that they need to do? Aside, obviously, from look at their data, see where they're going.
I'm glad you said that. You know, I'm data driven. I know data helps us to make the right decision. And, you know, for every organization to be accountable, you need your data to tell you where you are, where there are hotspots and gaps, what you need to be doing. And data is really, really important. So when you think about diversity, you think about, okay, sometimes your quantitative data will tell you the numbers, the figures, and you can use that to tell your narrative. And when you get to inclusion, the inclusion sentiment of your people, I think that's where the key work starts. Because if your internal reality doesn't match the story you're telling externally, you're missing a trick. Sometimes we need to step back to say, what are we not doing right? Because there's always room to improve. And I think, Vanessa, you said it earlier that, you know, when we get to the point, you know, of not doing or trying to encourage people to do these things, then we've nailed it. Absolutely right. When we get to the point where we don't need strategy to actually help a leader lead by example, then we know we've nailed it. But until then, I think the key element to actually creating or fostering an inclusive environment for organization is listening, listening plays a key part to our everyday inclusion. After you've listened as a leader or as a business, you act. So fostering everyday inclusion means, you know, leaders to lead with a tone of humility as you role model the company's culture. There is a tone of humility that you show up with, because when you're showing up into, for us as international, when you show up into India, you know, culture as an example, there is an element of cultural sensitivity. What is acceptable? What is not? How do I make sure they understand that I'm here to really learn from the culture? So I give an example. If I'm working or I have to do a grassroots work in India, I'm not going to take someone from the UK to tell me the culture in India. I go to India and I get to the locals and I'm like, tell me about it. What are your experiences like? How do I learn from this? Because in that way, what you're showing is you're leading with humility and humanity. And that's what people connect to, whether as a business, you know, because if you think about the community that you're serving, the people who support your business, your customers, they need to see that. That you are a business that listen and learn, and you act upon what you've listened and you've learned. So I think the biggest key is really listening, and then you drive action. So driving action will be that, you know, you have a regular check-in in order to create a psychological safety for the people you're asking to share those stories with you. And that's really important.
Absolutely. And you know, it's been such a theme across the whole conference. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that have been in the lounge sessions, but also on our panels. And it all goes back to the same thing around companies listening to the stories at a grassroots level and building from there, rather than sitting in ivory towers and thinking that they know what kind of needs to be done, but also continuous listening, right? It's not a one-off.
Absolutely. It's not one-off. Yeah.
So fantastic. So question for you, if you could make one societal change that would contribute towards a greater society, any kind of characteristic across the ED&I spectrum, what would it be?
My quick thought on that would be, can we all just be human? Can we really just all be human? Business is great. We do what we do because, you know, it is the right thing to do. And when I think about DEI, you think about the business case, you think about the moral case, and you think about the legal case. But my thought is around, can we all just be human? Because if you think about this, and what's happening in the world today is you and I and everyone. What's hurting one is hurting everybody. And just to drive that, we make sure that we're not taking the human element of how society should be. I hope I've been able to answer that question. I just think if we can all be human, you know, it will save, it will help us a lot.
Humanity, human all the way. So what lessons have you learned in your career? So this is like a pass the baton, you know, where we pass on those stories, those nuggets. What would you like to pass on to the people watching in terms of that killer kind of piece of career advice that you've been given or something that you've learned along the way?
Well, continue to learn. I learn every day from my conversation, the first time with you, and even now listening to some of the things you're echoing back. I'm learning. So keep that learning mind open. Have a growth mindset. That's what I would say. I love to talk about the humanity element of what we do, because if we lose that, we're losing the generations coming behind. Yeah. So I would encourage, you know, that people to show up every day, because this is what I do. I show up every day with humility and humanity. I show up to understand the stories of diversity and actually listening to people. I show up every day to navigate my space in this world with grace and courage because of those coming behind. So, you know, everybody's why would be different. But I think if you take anything from this call today, please take the fact that, you know, when you show up, don't just show up for yourself, but show up for other people.
I love that. We all need to show up, but I think the grace and compassion piece is really important, you know, because it's how we show up that's important, isn't it? So what's next for Rabbi?
I'm sure, Vanessa, you can see that I live in the moment. I don't have big, big plans. You know, I'm always present and I live this very moment because this is what I'm guaranteed. But we've got so much happening in the organization. I'm excited for this year. You know, we have our insights. If I'm talking from a career perspective and the business that we do, we have our insights. And now we're really challenging ourselves to use that insight to create everyday inclusion for everyone within the business, whether you are in Bulgaria, in Malta, in Isle of Man, in Canada, in Dublin, in Leeds, in London, in India. If I've said that, I'm saying it again. We are driving action for everyone to feel that they belong in Flutter International.
And I'm sure under your guise, you'll get there as well. So, Rabbi, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Such an inspirational lady with so much experience and love to give and wise words. So thank you so much for joining
me.
Thank
you, Vanessa.
If any of you want to find out more about Rabbi, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. But thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Rabbi, I cannot thank you enough for joining me on this episode of She Talks Tech. If you want to find out more about the inspirational Rabbi, you can connect with her on LinkedIn.